Excuse me, this is the conference coordinator. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Yeah, Liz, why don't we confirm we're being recorded?
Phew, let's get that out of the way.
That's a good idea, Mike.
That's my one big contribution today.
I think that would be a good place to start, unless anybody has anything else. I don't want to rehash what we've been talking about on the list.
Well, I'd also like to hear from Jeff what he thinks the steps forward are, because there seems to be some confusion whether we indeed need a new work group or this is the work group and we're going to go out for comment with what we come up with.
Yeah, I'd like to do that too. I mean, ideally, in my mind today, not ideally, but I would accept if, we can essentially hash out this motion as Jeff has modified it, and I know others of us might want to change it, and then put that out for a 21-day comment period, and then have council take action. You know, there also, I guess, as Avi suggested, we should at the same time allow constituencies to update their impact statements with respect to the motion. And of course, after the 21 days, we take a look at what if anything has been said, and can decide whether to make the motion to council at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds like a workable plan forward. Let's just leave in enough time at the end of the 21-day comment period to have that, one or two meetings or whatever we need to make sure that we've reflected the public comments. And I don't know how procedurally it would be viewed. I guess it's kind of updates to the final report, or I don't know exactly.
That's what I would suggest we do, is an update to the final report where we have a comment period and a few days for staff to integrate both the updated constituency statements and any additional public comments that are received and relevant on the specific proposals, and then have that sent to the council and posted, updated final report for further action.
This is Christina. If I could just jump in with two things that aren't clear to me. First, do we have a final yet, or is it still a draft final report? And if it's still a draft final report, are we anticipating it'll be made final and then updated, or we're not going to update it until we get through this 21-day period and then the outcome of that? I feel like I'm talking in circles. Report.
I think you're asking a good question, and I think it was, it can be the final report because technically, you can have a final report following that initial report and then the public comment period that was general. But in this case, I think Olaf left it at, and I don't know if he's on the call. I know he's in Taipei, so it's the middle of the night there. I believe he left it as a draft final report.
I thought it was left as draft pending the registrar's comments.
That's right. That's right.
We now have. I thought there was a discussion in Delhi that, given that we now have the registrar's comments, it de facto is final.
It is final. So
it's still not called a final report.
No, I understand it hasn't been printed that way.
That's right.
But I thought that was the discussion we had.
No. But I thought actually it's actually not a final report until I thought the final report was after the council voted on something.
Well, then you do a board report.
Right. That's
good. You do a board report, and the board report would also, in this case, it would have to have gone out for public comment post council acting. But I think what we're proposing alternatively is before finalizing the report that it go out for a specific comment on, a specific question that we can draft today or finalize today or over the next few days, or however you choose to proceed. But then those would be the question or questions that would be relevant for the purposes of public comment and for updating constituency statements. And staff could then take that and finalize.
I just want to make sure that whatever we go out for comment on, it's crystal clear what we're asking for comments on, and not obscure it so much with the other rest of the report that we can be accused of lack of clarity.
Right.
I agree with that.
Yep. And as a housekeeping matter, could we arrange for the final report or whatever it is to be posted on the GNSO site, because I'm not, it's on the list if you dig through all the email, but it's not on the issues page, and it's not in the draft documents page.
Okay. Let me check on that.
Or at least the draft documents link wasn't working when I checked it last night. Oh, and now it's working, so never mind.
Do it?
Yeah. Bizarre. Oh, we haven't. It's like calling the help desk.
Not being an expert on any of this process, I guess I would really like to see the document we have now with the constituency statements finalized and something else that we produce come out, so it's really clear that we're not asking for comments on the comments.
Right. Well, I think we could limit it to comments on this motion, I guess.
Right.
We can certainly refer people back to those links, but make it clear that we're asking, you know, for comments on this particular motion, which the council is considering for potential adoption.
And focus on impact, and like Mike said, get the constituencies to update their impact statement.
Exactly.
Right,
because I don't think this, there are certain constituencies that I know will want to have a statement in there.
So I'm just going heading back to try to find that original language to see if that's what we would want to use. So review and assess the impact of the attached motion. Judge whether the impact justifies taking these measures to impede domain tasting. And if yes, then consider the potential impact of that measure on the constituency.
Right. I think, does that address the three questions Chuck raised?
Yeah. Well, it's an attempted modification of those, which may not be exactly smooth.
But I think
the original terms of reference was a little broader because it presumed that you would review and assess the activities that have been identified, judge whether the overall effects justify measures to be taken to impede domain tasting. So again, more general. And if the answer to that is affirmative, then consider the potential impacts of various measures on the constituency. So here we're not talking about various measures. We're talking about a specific measure that you would want to have constituency statements based on.
Okay, I think that'll go a long way.
I guess I'm a little concerned then we could run into a process argument again, at least in Chuck's mind.
Well, the easy way to head that off is to just get him to sign off on this first.
Okay.
Starting late.
I think that is better than the alternative, which is to allow people to comment on any other potential remedies.
So everyone is comfortable using Jeff's as the proposed, or is that to be discussed further on this call today?
I think to be discussed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think I think it was updated since Alan pointed out an inconsistency that needs to be changed. And Liz, you sent me a note on a typo that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I've got a few.
Yeah, there's also have a few types that I haven't bothered talking about.
But
I have one substantive question for Jeff. This, as it's worded right now, it talks about 10% of the ads, assuming we make the correction removing renewals.
Correct.
I'm somewhat worried that in most other documents surrounding ICANN, when you talk about 10% of ads, it's gross ads, not net of AGP deletes, whereas your funnel request and Affilius's funnel request is a net. Now, without the surrounding words in the funnel request, this becomes somewhat unclear.
I think
it's easy to fix if we want to map to the funnel request, but it doesn't.
Yeah,
I think it stands right now, it isn't.
I think if you want to do that, you just need to create a definition for net adds and then put that somewhere.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Right, so because when people use the term gross and net, it's not always...
No, I wasn't trying to use capitalized words, but...
How about net new registrations in a month?
Yeah, we just need to define it as new minus AGPs. It's done in the funnel request. I think we can find some words.
Right. I'm good with that.
Good.
That was the intent.
Let's talk about the section at the end that you added on...
Yeah, I thought this was kind of... it's interesting that this never kind of came up, but, you know, everyone's focusing on the technical, what we could do technically to stop tasting, but we should also kind of make a policy statement that it's not a good thing, and to add a requirement in the registrar accreditation agreement for registrars to follow the policy.
Well, we tried to do that before.
Yeah, we tried to, but and got into the mess of whether speculation belonged in this, and I think you're correct. It doesn't belong in the consensus policy, but it may well belong in the registrar registry agreement or in the registrar ICANN agreement.
Right, and so what I did, basically what I tried to do is say, okay, well, for the purposes of that section, this is going to be included. So that's pretty much what I try to do, is basically say this prohibition would be included in that section 3.7.9, and then as such, you know, a registrar that engages in domain tasting in violation of this policy, absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstance, defined above shall be a material breach of the registrar accreditation agreement.
I'm not sure the term domain tasting is ever defined anywhere, so we may have to think about putting some words in for that, but I certainly agree with the concept.
Well, we've got a definition from the issues report if we want to define it.
Okay, I think there's been a definition that we've used in both the issues report and the outcomes.
Okay, we just may need to include some reference to it here.
Yep.
Do we even need to use the term there? Couldn't we just say a registrar that violates the agreement absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstances shall be found to be a material breach of the accreditation agreement?
I can live with that.
Yeah, that's a cleaner way to do it.
Well, say it again, a registrar that
violates this policy absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstances. Actually, since the extraordinary circumstance is already in there, you don't even really need that.
But what's the policy? The policy is that they're not allowed more than 10%?
Right.
So basically what we're saying is if they delete more than 10% and they're willing to eat the $6 we still don't want, that's still a violation of the policy.
That was my understanding of the purpose of that addition at the end.
Correct. It adds something on the gaming factor so people don't later on say it could be gamed, and also makes a registrar have to be a little bit vigilant and also keep ICANN in the game too by, you know, if it eventually does actually enforce its accreditation agreement, it gives them one more vehicle to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just as the registrar on this call, we're all for it, but I'm not sure. There was some concern about that language from registrars in the last time, so I can't say that's not going to come up again. But
yeah, that'd be my concern too. That, you know, do we really need this, and is it going to possibly cost us registrars?
Well, we're really talking about, are there registrars out there who want to pay $6 for a 5-day registration? I'm not quite sure the logic of why one would want to do that.
That's why I personally like it, because it sort of closes a potential loophole, and it would seem to address a lot of concerns that others have had about gaming and that kind of thing.
Right.
If we leave it in and take public comment on it, and the public comment is resoundingly against it,
then
we act on the public comment and we take it out. We kill two birds with one stone. We get a motion that people can live with, and we're actually responding to public comment, which I can't do notoriously doesn't do.
You sound like a politician.
Well, you know, I am 12 blocks away from the Capitol.
And remember, the policy is that you only have to pay the percent that's above the 10%. So if a registrar routinely does 11%, they're only paying for the 1% above the 10%. So it can be, I don't think it's likely to be gamed, but in theory it could be.
Do we have a strong feeling, I know this will likely come out in the comment period, do we have a strong feeling that the 10% is an appropriate number for Common Org?
Well, we haven't gotten any data for Com and Net and Org. Well, Com and Net, anyway.
Yeah, I was just asking for sort of a gut feeling that looking at the the statistics that are published.
I mean, look, Biz and Info compared our numbers, and we sent it out to the list. I was told verbally by Chuck that the percentages are pretty much the same. And what we see, and this is what I said at the mic, we see registrars that do not engage in tasting, have variable numbers up to, about 7 or 8, possibly on any given month, 9%. And these are reputable registrars that do not engage in tasting. So, we rounded it up to 10, recognizing that when tasting does occur, you're not talking about, 11, 12, 13%. You're really talking about 1,000%.
10,000, actually, if you look at the numbers.
Right.
Yeah.
So, is 10% the right number?
Okay.
I think it is.
If the bottom line comes out, there's strong comment that we really need it to be 15 or 12, so be it. We'll look at it at that time.
Yeah.
Well, and this is a question I get from my constituents all the time, and maybe you guys can answer this for me. What is going on, and I don't mean specifics, but generally, such that a registrar would have kind of consistently, like a 25% deletion rate, is the first question. Because people just don't get that. And I don't have the foggiest idea how to answer that. I mean, is it just possible that in the normal course of business, you're going to have 25%?
No,
delete?
No, 25% is pretty high. But I would say that it is normal to get a 5, 6, or 7% a month for all the reasons that the registrars indicated in the presentation. It is quite normal to see between 5 and 8% routinely.
I mean, part of this is indeed to counteract fraud, someone registering 1,000 domains overnight on a Saturday with stolen credit cards. And part of it, presumably, are various things the registrars do to do validity testing and software testing, and that's going to end up being self-limiting. If the number is 10%, then they'll make sure it's under 10% to cover that.
Some of the registrars have resellers that they, have agreements with, but they can't necessarily control all of the activities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they have to, we find that registrars that have a reseller unit have higher deletion rates than those that do not.
So, for example, and I'm not going to name a registrar, if you have a registrar that's going from a 28% deletion rate to a 0.85 deletion rate in the course of over 1 month, would it be based on your experience? Would it seem that, either the previous month there was some big problem or, conversely, there's a particular reseller that may have been troublesome that is no longer affiliated? I'm just trying, because these are the questions I'm getting, because people are looking at these numbers and saying, well, if somebody can go from 28% to 0.85, why do we need 10?
Well,
and these are the questions that I need answers to.
I think you really need to look at the specifics of, are they doing 28% every second month, or is it 1 month out of 24?
It's like consistently like 25%.
I would say.
Because what I then get is, if they can bring it down that much, why can't everybody? And again, these are questions I don't have answers to, and I don't expect that you guys do, but you have a better basis for possible explanations.
So I don't think anyone's looked that closely at the numbers, as close as you or your members would like. But I think if we take a step back, And if we all agree that, hey, if what we're doing ends tasting, shouldn't we be satisfied? In other words, there may be reasons that we don't know of for an excess deletion rate,
mm-hmm.
but do we care if it eliminates tasting?
No.
Right. So I think that's more the message than, you know, trying to justify whether 10 versus 11 or 12 or 8 or 9. I think if we can all agree, because most of us will agree, that tasting, when there's a registrar that primarily engages in tasting, you will find the percentages so far out of whack that it's obvious. But if it's 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, I just don't think that, because it's not tasting and it's something else, it's not really a problem that the consumers need to combat at this point.
All right. Well, that actually raises my next point, which is the one issue that my constituents have a concern with is what happens if this isn't enough? And I've been getting a lot of pushback about trying to get some language added that would basically create an opportunity for counsel to go back or perhaps even an obligation to revisit the issue in a year or, you know, 18 months to see whether the policy has had an appreciable impact on tasting. And if not, to take further action at that time. Because the concern that my folks have, you know, given that they are starting at just get rid of the AGP, so this motion is a pretty significant compromise from their perspective. And their concern is what if we compromise on this and it doesn't get us where we need to be?
Well, I mean, I can already tell you, let me say first that I think building in a review mechanism is a good idea. So I think we could add that to the motion, add like, you know, in a year or if that's not enough time, a year and a half, add a review. But I will tell you, Christina, there are other ways. Tasting's still going to occur. Well, no, I shouldn't say that.
You know, if the registry wants tasting to occur, tasting can occur.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Well, it's not tasting, it's something.
No, it's not tasting, but there can be mechanisms by which one can try domains and not have to pay a lot of money for them.
Right.
If all parties decide this is what they want to happen, it's going to be awful hard for us to fight it. You know, other than putting in place completely new rules that have nothing to do with the AGP.
Right. That's correct.
Christina, what kind of mechanism do you think makes sense?
I'm almost thinking along the lines of just a sentence that would impose on the council an obligation to a year after the policy goes into effect or 18 months from its passage, whichever happens first, to review the information that's provided in the monthly registry reports and to consult with the community to see whether the problem of tasting has been effectively eliminated through this mechanism.
I think, Liz, I think you can borrow some language from the final transfers report from a few years back.
Right.
Just borrow that exact language, although maybe a shorter time frame. I think they had 2 years or 3 years or something. But there was a review mechanism in that final transfers report.
Yeah, I mean, in a year obviously might be too long, but, you know, trying to be reasonable here.
I think a year, well,
much less than a year is going to be hard given that there's a 3-month lag.
Right.
I'm not sure we're going to recognize tasting from the numbers, given that the numbers will be so different.
You won't. At least it should be. I mean, you'll know there are names. There's still lots of names and lots of search engines out there, but you're not going to know.
Well, we're not getting rid of monetization.
Right.
All we're saying
is
people have to pay for the right.
Right. Because if I can find them, I can chew them. It's just when they're a moving target that I can't get them.
So, Christina, you think if there is the review, language added, which to me would seem to make sense. I mean, we did that with other policies. And then with the language that Jeff was suggesting about the registrar accreditation agreement is added, does that address the concerns, do you think, sufficiently?
It goes a really long way, and I say that because there are, you know, frankly, there are some people in my constituency that just aren't going to be happy until the AGP goes away, and I kind of, you know, at a certain point, I kind of have to say, well, that's never going to happen. So it goes a really long way. But there, you know, there's another issue in this motion that I know that you've raised questions about that I think we probably also should talk about, and that's the reporting.
Yeah. Right. And I think
what I'm concerned about is trying to garner registrar support because, well, in reality, I mean, the registrars all voted against initiating the PVP in the first place, right? So there's a potential that no matter what we come out of with this group, that it could be difficult to get the registrar counselors to vote in favor of anything. But if, you know, that was my concern about the speculation language, although I personally agree with it, whether that will fly. And then the same with the reporting, that that would raise similar concerns. Given that, you know, if a registrar legitimately had an issue and you know, for that reason, then why would that need to be made public?
So I was very, Tim, I was very careful in the language I crafted. All I said is that we need to report it to ICANN, and it kind of leaves open whether that is made public or not. I tend to agree with you, Tim, that I don't think it should be made public unless, you know, unless there's some repeated pattern or, you know, and that's, by the way, that's another reason why I put the language in for the accreditation agreement, too, is to kind of, because that would be public if a registrar, if there's a material breach alleged by ICANN against a registrar. But I think, so I left it silent as to whether it's confidential, because remember, there are reports that registries do submit every month to ICANN that are confidential.
Right. If I understand correctly, though, we're already reporting the number of AGP deletes per registrar. So if people exceed the 10%, it's going to be visible. All we're not seeing is whether it was allowed as an exemption or they paid the price for them.
Correct.
And the reason why it was an exemption, if it was an exemption.
Correct.
No, so we're not advertising that, hey, I'm prone to fraud and, you know, I got an exemption for some other reason. But we're still going to be documenting that there that any given registrar is over the limit. Do we really care a lot about whether they paid $6 a piece or got an exemption that was accepted by the registry? We're still highlighting the registrar.
Dan, I think if the intent is that this gets reported to ICANN for their information and, you know, it whether, you know, any issue about it becoming public is a matter of, you know, compliance issue or whatever, then that's another story. Because you're right, it's going to be part of the registry report.
Well, I know PIR reports AGPs on a per-registrar basis. I'm not sure VeriSign does currently.
With the
new reporting things,
they do? They do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so it's effectively going to be there. All we're going to do is all we need someone is to highlight the report.
The rationale, just so that if this helps at all, the rationale that was behind the original suggestion was kind of twofold. One, and Jeff, don't take this personally, I don't mean it this way, but just to kind of keep the registries honest. You know, if they're handing out, you know, 50 extraordinary circumstances exemptions every month to the same registrars, regardless of what this says, then I think there needs to be a mechanism to know that. And second, that if there is kind of on the flip side, a registrar that is repeatedly seeking extraordinary circumstances exemptions, to be perfectly candid, personally, that's not a registrar I would want to do business with, and I would think that the registrar community should be entitled to know that.
So on point number one, I don't take offense to that. I think that that's right. I think, but it was ICANN staff that I would put in that role to kind of Now, whether you trust ICANN staff to do it or not is another question.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was kind of what I was envisioning for ICANN's role. You don't need to disclose that to the community necessarily, but ICANN, as part of their compliance process, could look into it and maybe summarize in a generic way what's going on without naming registrars. The second point about not wanting to do business with the registrar, if there's a registrar that we find that's abusing the extraordinary circumstance, that was kind of another reason why I wanted it in the accreditation agreement, so that ICANN can come in and step up and take some action.
The funnel request has language saying that repetitive requests for the same exemption are deemed to be not an exception.
Right.
Maybe we need to put some of that language back into this one again to reinforce the fact that it's not purely up to the discretion of the registry. It's up to the discretion of the registry to refuse, but it's not purely up to the registry to accept if there's a pattern developing.
But isn't that an enforcement issue, or?
Well, not really, because the words in the funnel request say that repetitive uses is deemed to not be an exception. In other words, it's not at some level it's not a discretionary decision anymore. You simply cannot do it. And yes, you have to enforce it ultimately, but that gives strength to the fact that it's less of a judgment call, and there's less opportunity for registry to be perceived as gaming.
Yeah, I'm looking for the language right now.
I mean, just to put this in context for all of you, I mean, the other thing that I keep reminding myself is that, you know, 900 TLDs coming down the pike.
Well, I think we need to address that. Kurt certainly said that he was amenable to making sure that all new contracts have a similar provision in it to whatever we come up with. And I think we need to make that part of our recommendation.
But if it's a policy, why would it need to actually go in the contract?
You're right.
Keep the horse till it's dead is fine with me, but
if they have an AGP, then this consensus policy would apply.
Right.
So it probably doesn't need to be explicitly there. But on the other hand, it may not hurt.
Right.
Again, we're talking about something the ICANN lawyers can discuss.
Right.
So here's what the language says in the funnel request. It says, the exercise of the exception mechanism will be at the sole discretion of Newstar, well, the registry. However, quote, extraordinary circumstances, quote, which reoccur regularly will be deemed to not be extraordinary. Do you want me to send that on the list?
Yes, please.
It sounds like we're coming to closure on this, that what we want to do is clean up this resolution with the changes we've made and the typos, and I presume have another meeting next week to sign off on it. Does that sound about where we're going?
That's fine.
Yep.
That works for me, because then as long as we get it before the next council meeting, obviously we're not going to do it by Thursday, but the one after that.
Are we having a council meeting on Thursday, or is it just asking Rita questions?
It's just the Rita.
Okay.
Right. I saw there was a rescheduling of the meeting, wasn't there?
So the next council meeting is March 6th, and the following is the 27th.
Oh, that's my calendar. Okay. So, I
guess. So depending on when you wanted to.
I want it for March 6th, then, obviously. Let's try to get Kim.
Well, but does
council need to send it out for comment, or can we do that?
I would suggest you get the council to vote on this with the date in it. So,
oh, that's a good idea.
Right. So I'm just looking at the calendar. We need the motions some period of time.
When's the meeting after April? When's the April meeting?
17th.
There's also, this was March 6th, and I take it there must be one like March 20th?
March
27th.
27th, and then the 17th of April. So if you wanted to do the 21-day comment period, for example, you could have them vote on the 6th to launch the 21-day comment period, do the 27th, have the summary of the comments, basically the final report, by the 3rd, and have the council vote on the resolution by the 17th.
Well, I don't think that leaves enough time to actually modify if we need to.
Well, and that and the fact that it's got to be on the council list for a week before we can vote on it.
Right, but we still would. So let's say we vote on it on the 6th.
No, we can't. That means it would have to get posted.
Let's say it gets posted on the 10th. 21 days, that closes the 31st. So we still have 17 days from that point to get it finalized and a week before council, 10 days to get it finalized.
No,
Liz is talking about, if I'm understanding you correctly, putting a motion out to say, this is what the design team has come up with. These are the dates that we want to move this forward on.
Right.
Let's pass a motion that basically
correct.
Put locks this in cement.
Correct.
But you need to do that at the front end.
I agree.
But we're not going to have that a week before the meeting on the 6th.
Correct. That's my point.
That's Thursday. That's 2 days from now.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to have it a whole week ahead of time, especially this one that's already been bandied around.
I honestly would rather just take the extra time because, you know, and maybe someone needs to reach out to Chuck Offlist and see where he is on this. Because what I don't want to do is have us, you know, bend over backwards and do somersaults to get the sign-off that we would need to all get internally from our various constituencies in order to come back on by Thursday and say, okay, it's a go. Only to have Chuck then say, you know, I'm not comfortable with this or, you know, whatever.
So then you're basically
my impression is Chuck isn't going to be – my impression is Chuck won't be comfortable with it unless we have a working group.
Well, in that case.
Well,
I think we should check with him.
Maybe Jeff has a different impression from talking to him.
If we don't vote on this on the 6th, then we're not going to vote on it until the 27th. That's a month from today.
I think all you're voting on now is to send it out for comment.
Exactly.
I don't think anyone can oppose that.
Exactly.
But do we need council to have the motion, the final motion, a week before the meeting of the 6th? To get them to do that.
No, that is not a rule of the council. That's a wish of Avery. But I'm sure in this case, it's not going to be a problem even for Avery, given that this motion has already been circulated. There's been plenty of discussion about this in council.
Right, and the new line, I mean, the only thing that's really new in this is the warehousing speculation language, which was kind of already in there in the first place.
So the motion should state the agreed language of this group on Jeff's proposal. It should set forth a schedule for comment and constituency statements with proposed questions for public comment and constituency impact statements, which would be basically crystallizing what the impact of this proposal would be on each stakeholder group, and ask for those comments to be provided within a 21-day period to conclude on the 27th, and to direct staff or ask staff to summarize those statements by the 3rd or the 7th.
Yeah, I would say the 3rd, so that this group could get together and parse through them and come up with something, hopefully.
By the 10th, that the council could consider at its meeting on the 17th.
Okay, so we need to serve notice to Avery that we want something. We want a slot on the agenda on the 6th.
Yes.
And basically what it is, even though we don't have the wording of the motion ready at this point.
And don't you think we could maybe get the wording of the motion done today? Obviously, we've got to circulate it around to review, but, I mean, we should definitely hash out any issues that we have with it today.
I don't think we have any disagreement. I just suspect each of us are going to have to send in some comments to whoever's going to redraft the next version, and it shouldn't take more than a day or so to do.
I hate trying to do things on a, especially on a conference call when we can't see things.
Okay, well, I mean, I think at least any substantive issues other than just wordsmithing.
We're having remarkably few differences at this point.
Right. I want to make sure we don't have a bunch more unnecessary delay.
Okay, so if Jeff can finalize the changes that you all wanted to see that you discussed earlier in the language of the motion itself, I'm going to run by Chuck the proposed, for lack of a better word, term of reference for the public comment, which is going to request specific impacts for each constituency of the recommendation reflected in the motion. And then someone just needs to craft that additional language that spells out the date that to put in the motion itself. The dates for when you would want public comment initiated, terminated, the staff report, and then...
You know, Liz, realistically, if the council votes on the 6th, that would basically mean that, you know, before the end of that calendar day, this would have to get posted for public comment. Does that give you guys enough time?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, okay. You know, we would have an extra day just to post it, and we can certainly send it to the council, you know, confirmation to
all
the
right.
council. But, yeah, you do want, ideally, 24 hours, especially since I can't remember which call. I think that call is a later call.
So, Liz, were you also going to make that change that was discussed about in the registrar language?
No, I need someone else to make the changes, to the substantive changes that you all discussed early on in the call. The only thing I was going to try to insert was the language that would basically direct constituencies to describe the impacts to their of this proposal on their entity and see if Chuck was fine with that.
So who had comments on typos? Maybe that person can put that language in along with the typo changes.
What language are you talking about exactly, Jeff?
Someone had said in the warehousing language that because there's no definition of domain tasting.
Oh, okay, what Christian was saying. Okay, I got it. So what I've already edited that. Let's see if this makes sense. The last sentence now reads, according to me, as such, a registrar that deletes in excess of 10% net new registrations in a given month, absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstances defined above, shall be deemed in material breach of the RAA.
How about something that actually ties closer to the language that says, as such, a registrar that violates the above prohibition on abuse of the ad grace period, comma, absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstances, blah, 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 blah.
That's the problem. We don't call it necessarily an abuse of, and there's no specific violation. The violation is more than 10%.
Yeah, that was kind of my issue, is that we don't come out and state it's a policy that this shouldn't happen. It's just registrars should only allow the ad grace period to be, a registry should only allow registrars to delete a certain percentage.
All right.
So that was my difficulty, too. That's why I use domain tasting, and if you put it
why don't we just say in conduct in violation or in registration activities?
Well, technically, they can't violate the policy, right? I mean, unless the registry lets them.
Well, the registry will let them, but you just have to pay.
Yeah. So what I'm, you know, if the policy is, then maybe that's something to clarify. If the policy is that, you can only delete up to 10% of your net registration without paying. As long as you're willing to pay, are you not in violation? Are you?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I got to go back a second. I remember now what I was thinking as to why I put domain tasting. What we're saying is, in essence, right? We're saying that domain tasting is a bad thing. I'm oversimplifying it, right? And that we're saying that in order to keep the AGP, but try to eliminate domain tasting while keeping the AGP, registries can only allow X percent by registrars, blah, blah, blah. But that still doesn't make the act of tasting a domain name a violation of an agreement.
I like that.
Right? So what I was saying, well, the reason I put domain tasting in there is we're saying, look, registrar, whether you taste one name or five names, the act of domain tasting is itself a bad idea.
If
but that's not what this says.
No, I know. But if we actually take the trouble to define tasting as the ability to use a domain name live without having paid for it, then if we actually use the term domain tasting here, we're not only talking about this particular 10% AGP process, but we're saying if you're smart enough to come up with another one, it also is in violation.
Right. So what is the definition we use of domain tasting in the final report?
Hold on, I'll pull it up.
Now I'm actually remembering why I did what I did.
I mean, if we can pull that off, we end up with a much stronger statement than anything we've talked about.
Well, in the issues report, it's defined as using the add grace period to register domain names in order to test their profitability. Let's see if the outcomes report has a different definition.
We need a more generalized one than that, then.
Well, more generalized. Actually, I'm okay with that definition. A more generalized one would hurt. You know, .name doesn't experience any tasting. They haven't. But they do have a free trial period for 30 days. And people could test out whether they like the name or not. They haven't had tasting to be a problem.
Yeah.
They've sold a number of names. It's been a very successful marketing program for them, and they don't want to limit the ability to do that.
Yeah, can you read that one more time?
Yeah, we said it was, where is it? It's on the page 3 of the issues report. The practice of domain tasting, and then the parenthetical is the definition. Using the add grace period to register domain names in order to test their profitability.
I'm fine with that definition.
Okay. I can live with it then.
I don't know that that really prescribes all the conduct that we want to get to, though, because the practice of typo squatting for short periods of time for hard-to-identify infringement, I don't think that would actually fall within that definition.
Well, I think you're basically covering your bases. You're getting a registrar to delete no more than 10%, and then you're talking about if they register up to 10% for tasting, you're kind of getting at it. I mean, you're only getting at the AGP. You're not getting into normal typo squatting, but I think that's...
Right. That's different. I mean, a definition that I have used is the systematic exploitation of the add grace period to test the monetization potential of domain names at no cost to the registrar.
I like the original issues report.
That's fine. That's fine.
I think yours is loaded with terms that people may object to.
All right. That's a surprise.
Well, I'm trying to make it as...
I know. I'm just teasing.
A little inflammatory.
I've put in the defined as using the AGP to register domain names in order to test their profitability. We strike out absent the demonstration of extraordinary circumstances defined above or leave that in? Doesn't seem to be relevant.
Well, the extraordinary circumstances implicitly are not for tasting.
Right.
So I don't think we need. Right. I don't think we need to mention
it. Here, you know, the one thing I'm having trouble with, and I don't want to upset the apple cart here, but it seems to me that what we're saying with this language, and I like this language, I want to find a way to keep this language in or something like it. But what we're overall saying is, registrar. Here's the threshold. If you want to exceed it, you're just going to have to pay for it. And registry, you can charge them for it. But then it goes on to say that registrar, you know, you paid for it, and it's a material breach. So I'm just not sure that we're being consistent there.
Well, this new language is aimed at gaming as well as exceeding. So And it's also could apply even if they don't exceed the 10% but are systematically abusing
right.
the AGB.
And they're also from two different parties. Right? One is the registry enforcing, using its technical means to do so. The other is ICANN stepping in and doing its own enforcement program.
Yeah, what we're doing now is attempting to define one example of speculation. We're not necessarily saying you're in violation of the 10% rule, just that you're trying to take advantage of the AGP.
Right. Okay.
And that's a much wider statement.
Right.
I'm still kind of hesitant about the statement of the intent in the definition of domain tasting, though. Don't we want to prevent any systematic exploitation of the AGP, regardless of whether it's designed to test profitability or somehow other, profit systematically off of the AGP?
Maybe, but you're gonna get too much opposition on that. It's gonna be too controversial. You got,
right.
And I don't know what systematic means, and I think we need to take baby steps at this point.
Well, let's use. I mean, we have a different definition in the outcome in the issues report. The issues report has a slightly different definition. Well, not that different. Monetization practice employed by registrants to use the ad grace period to register domain names in order to test their profitability.
Yeah, and I would take out, I mean, not take out profitability, but add, it's profitability or marketability or profit's kind of a loaded term, too.
Yeah.
Would this language apply to the practice of putting a domain on hold where the customer had merely looked it up?
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh.
Sorry, say that again?
The hypothetical practice.
Of what? Say that again? Sorry.
Putting a domain on hold for 5 days if someone looks it up.
I don't think a registrar would be able to do it because they have to actually register the name in order to do it. In other words, Network Solutions would not be able to do that in .biz after our proposal, right, because they're actually registering the name for 5 days.
Right.
It depends how many they look up. But in theory, they could do it selectively if someone asked them to, for instance. They just have to manage the number.
I think that falls into the area of why I'm not thrilled with this catch-all language, because I don't think it actually catches everything.
It's not going to catch everything, but it Network Solutions won't. It would be too expensive for them to build a system that randomly picks out less than 10% of their names a month, plus takes into consideration their normal deletion rate. Right? So if their normal deletion rate is, I'm making this up, I don't know what it is, but if it's between 3% and 5% a month, then they have to randomly pick only between additional 3 to 5%. It just wouldn't be worth the time or effort. I can't imagine they would do that.
I'm concerned that by making this vague and using the profitability definition, that we're just going to run into more problems and hassle. I kind of like the way Jeff had it originally, or actually as it was suggested, to tie it back to the 10% or 50%. And just say if they do that, then that is domain tasting and shall be deemed a material breach.
Maybe this is a good candidate for tying back to that annual review that you suggested before, Christina, with, specifically what the number should be.
I mean, I'd really like us to basically come out with a policy that says that domain tasting is a bad thing, right? And the only way I can think of to do that is to put a prohibition in the registrar accreditation agreement against domain tasting. And that's why I put the language I did, and if you define it as the way Christina was starting to, I think we're good. It's not going to catch everything,
no.
But I think it's a good start.
I support that.
You didn't like it because it had profitability in there.
No, I said we should include other words in addition to profitability. So it's like, I forgot exactly what it was, but you say marketability or profitability.
Say business value, maybe?
Profitability or value?
I can't remember what the words were now.
Well, it's all been recorded.
If we use an expression like to evaluate the business potential, that doesn't say it's profitable, but comes
That's
back
pretty good.
To the basic measure.
I don't know, business potential, because I could, an IP owner could register a name for a few days.
How about just test the
potential.
Evaluate their potential value.
How about utility?
That's a bad one, too, right? Think about, I've registered names as an IP owner to just put them on hold to evaluate whether that's the name I want, and I've ended up deleting them after a few days because we're not going forward with the business model to do that.
We can aggregate them?
Yeah.
Oh.
You should have thought of that, Christina.
You know, honestly, it's cheaper for my clients to just keep the registration than to pay for me to go back and delete them.
Maybe it could be tied directly to what they're looking at when they do this. It's pretty much, you know, how much click-through traffic it gets, you know, how many hits or whatever, to evaluate the traffic or something of that nature.
I mean, not just traffic, it's resale value. What's wrong with in order to evaluate their potential value?
To evaluate the domain names. What did you say? What value?
Defined, so domain tasting, defined as using the AGP to register domain names in order to evaluate their potential value. Evaluate their value.
Business value.
How about analyze their potential value?
So it's not business value. It's really monetization or traffic.
Right. But we also want to keep it general enough.
Yeah, value.
So that we're not locked in to just this iteration of it.
You know, we might as well throw it out there with value and see what we get back from the comments, rather than us trying to struggle with it.
Yeah.
So if, even if a registrar stays within, I keep coming around on this, you know, putting this into the, tying these two things together, because they almost seem separate. Just putting it in the registrar accreditation agreement, and then what we're trying to do to limit the way the AGP could be abused. So if we say value, then someone could do what Jeff is saying, and that could be considered value. That would be a violation of the registrar accreditation agreement, even if it doesn't cost them money based on the AGP limitation.
Sorry, I've lost you there.
Well, you know, we're saying there's a 10% limit on the of deletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you pay, otherwise, then there's no refund. But then we're saying also that tasting, however we define it, is a violation of the registrar accreditation agreement. So if we define it as using the ABT to find value, then it doesn't matter what your percentage of deletes are. If we can pick out even what Jeff just described he does occasionally, that would be a violation of how we just define tasting.
No, we've got to tie it back to the 10%.
Sorry, why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Tim makes a good point. Because I think Tim's right.
Well, if we tie it to the 10%, it's serving a very different function than if it's not tied to the 10%.
If you're tying it to the 10%, basically you're tying a policy to a technical implementation, which I think is not really the – you should come out with your policy statement that you think domain tasting is bad, and domain tasting in and of itself is a violation of the agreement. And what registries are coming forward and saying is, in order to help implement that policy, but while at the same time keeping an ad grace period for those that legitimately need it, we're putting an automated solution in to charge or to not issue a refund after 10% is hit. I think they're two different things. And I actually prefer to keep them separate.
I support what you're saying. We may not be able to make this fly that says domain tasting is evil and you shouldn't do it, but I think we should try.
Well, maybe there's another way to do it and say that that domain tasting, as may be evidenced by a violation of this prohibition, so that you're basically saying that if you're violating this prohibition, that would be indicative of or suggestive of whatever, but that's not solely the only way you could go about it.
And then not define domain tasting?
You kind of need.
I like keeping the practice of identifying the practice as something which is a violation of the RAA.
No. I'm sorry. I'm not being clear. That you would keep the domain tasting word. You would define it, and that instead of tying it exclusively to this AGP restriction, to have the AGP, the violation of the AGP restriction, be an illustration of that type of activity.
But you're not really violating it by going above 10%. Just paying.
You're just paying.
Right.
There's no violation of
policy. Right, and that's what I was saying before, is that that's what I was having a hard time reconciling.
So how about this? Registrar engages in domain tasting defined as using AGP to register domain names in order to minimize their potential value, as may be evidenced by excess deletes of 10% or 50%, whichever is greater, shall be deemed material breach. That works? We have all that in there?
I don't think we need it.
Yeah, I don't think you need it either.
I don't think we need it either, but I'm just trying.
Let's keep it simple and see who objects.
Yeah.
Now, that's fine with me. There just needs to be, just from a registrar's perspective, even one who doesn't do tasting, all kinds of things started going through my mind about how we could violate that. And, you know, I just want to make sure that something clear and understandable and specific that registrars can, you know, put their hands around and say, this is a violation, this isn't, so that there's not this ambiguity that exists in so many different things out there.
That's what I would have the same issue if I were you as a registrar, and that's why I felt like it's better to just quote the rule above, and I don't think we really need to go that much farther if we all agree that's going to end tasting anyway.
I can live with what you're saying, but I like Jeff's idea of identifying the concept of tasting as the thing we're trying to prohibit,
right,
and not confuse it with how we're recognizing it.
Unless we do that in a whereas clause.
That's not going to be enforceable. Remember, there's words in the registrar accreditation agreement like speculation and warehousing that I can never been able to enforce because they don't know what it means.
Well, actually, it says that they're only illegal if policy's adopted, and policy's never been adopted.
Yeah.
That's why I want to make this the first.
I agree.
I am with you on that.
That's why we say the act of domain tasting, which is defined as using the AGP for the purpose of...
The registrars are going to throw up all over this.
Well, of course they're going to throw up on it because they want the registries to do all the work. No, because...
I'm just glad that I'm not the one who suggested it this time.
Yeah, me either, for that matter. John Nevitt, are you reading this?
I think I take your point. But right now, just to say value, that's just so, I mean, it almost guarantees we're going to get.
Yeah, then
total registrar objection to it. And I think it's going to be tough anyway, I'll be honest with you, you know, to say, yeah, you know, some of the one or more counselors are going to be able to do this thing. I really hope that's true, but when we start putting this stuff in there, it gets tougher. I'm not saying we shouldn't have it in there. I'm just saying that it needs to be fairly defined, and if we just leave it in, you know, open and see what happens, I know it's going to happen.
So then why don't we just keep the same language that's in the issues report, which is the profitability language. We'll just leave it in there. We'll cite back to the issues report, you know, when people ask. That's why we put that language in there. I mean, really, that was supposed to be the work of the group anyway, is to discuss domain tasting, and you have to make the policy statement that it's not a good thing.
Well, then let's put that in the whereas clause as well. I realize that the whereas clause is not enforceable, but in that it's this recommendation that gives it teeth. But, you know, we don't actually come out and say it anywhere.
Well, that's why I put the registrar accreditation language in there, because that's the only way to say it.
Right, no, I agree with you. And I guess my point is, you know, let's put it also in a whereas clause and define it in the whereas clause, so then we don't have to muck up the policy recommendation with it. And I don't know if anyone see it, but Chuck has weighed in on our proposed course of action. Basically that it's the job of the you need a total benefit compared to the total impact, and that you can't have each constituency do it on its own and then add them all together.
You know what that means?
Well, whoever it was that said he wanted a working group, I think they were right. I mean, you know, maybe one thing that we do need to do is think about, once we get public comment back, do we then have to have the council kind of going through the exercise of doing the review and assessment based on what's in the reports?
Well, council or a working group.
I don't know.
I just don't feel like, I feel like this throw in at the end is going to end up doing more harm getting this done than good. I agree that we should say domain tasting is bad, so let's say it up front in the whereas clause. But we haven't come to a policy recommendation on anything else other than this 10% to 50 rule. So to say that something else is a violation and not to find it is just not going to work for anybody.
I mean, the other option is that when we send this out for public comment, that we make it very clear that we're looking for public comment on the motion in its entirety as well as to each of its component parts.
David's like a true lawyer.
No, I'm completely serious, because if somebody really doesn't like the language in the second bullet point with extraordinary circumstances, and they actually give us new language, which is also something I would encourage us to solicit, if people have a complaint, you know, give us something that you like better. You know, that we may end up with something that works better for everyone.
Yeah, I like the idea of keeping the RAA part in. We can always ditch it at the end. It sends a really strong message to the community that, you know, that we want ICANN to treat this seriously.
And during, when we post it for public comment, there's no problem with, you know, asking some specific questions, certainly welcoming any comment, but that specifically we have these questions or would like comments on these parts, right? I mean,
no.
Oh, I think in particular we should do that.
Yeah.
And it's been done before. It was in the original issues report, actually. It, like, laid out all the questions that you know, weren't answered.
I mean, the last paragraph right now is not part of a recommendation to the board to establish a consensus policy. It's a separate statement linked in concept to what we're talking about, but it's really disjoint from it. And I think it can live or die separately.
And maybe ultimately that's how we have to vote on it.
Perhaps.
That we have two iterations. We vote with, you know, the first one being this whole thing, and if that fails, then we delete the RAA part and vote on that.
Or separate it in the council motion that we do the consensus policy, and then we do this one.
They're aimed at different goals anyway.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I just am concerned about this process issue that you raised again.
I don't really like opening this can of worms right now when we're kind of close to can see the end of the tunnel.
I'm not sure, quite sure I can parse Chuck's comment in any case. But I understand the concept of the whole may be different from the sum of its parts, but I'm not quite sure how it applies in this case.
Yeah, I think Chuck's more referring to when we analyze the comments, and we have 21 days to do that, you know, to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, we wouldn't, though. The analysis would only be the week in between once we get them back. And
well, then give us more time.
And
I would rather have us take more time to read the public comments and see whether we need to do, you know, whether we need to tinker and get something that we have a better chance of getting through than to only give us a week to read the public comments, incorporate them.
I think that's really smart, Christina, and I actually really agree. The thing that I'm not sure about is even, for example, part of what Chuck may be referring to here is almost a macroeconomic impact that would be saying that you can't just, not simply a matter of adding these all together. So I think it begs the question of even how that analysis would occur and what expertise might be required to conduct it.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to satisfy every single registry.
That they need as well.
Right, I don't think... I'll try talking to Chuck, but there could be other things at work here. I think the plan that we've laid out is a good one, and we should stick to it. I think the goal would be to get the board to vote on it in Paris.
Yep.
And we should work backwards from that. In order for the board to vote on it in Paris,
they have to have it a month ahead of time.
They'll have to have it a month ahead of time, and they'll probably send it out for comment too. I think.
Yep. I think that has to be our end target, and trying to save a week along the way, which may jeopardize getting a supermajority support in council, I think is unwise.
So when is the Paris trip? June?
Yeah, the end of June.
The end of June?
Yeah, starting, I want to say the 21st, the Saturday.
So like,
the board meeting is going to be on Friday the 27th.
So you should count, okay, 30 days before the board meeting.
Right.
Is May 27th.
No. May 29th.
Oh, I was doing the proverbial a month before. So the staff needs to have it by the 20th, May 20th. When's the council meeting in May?
I need to check.
Well, the 6th, the 27th, the 17th, the 8th, and the 29th. So we would have to vote on the 8th.
The 8th. That's the goal, it's May 8th.
Does that month include the time that the board might want to post it?
Well, if the GNSO Council votes and approves it May 8th, then the board's got a month and a half to get it up there and post it.
Why would they do that? They didn't do that for new GTLDs.
Consensus policy and changes to contracts need. You're talking about changes to contracts here. And that
they haven't voted on GTLDs yet, have they, technically?
No, but my point is that, you know, they didn't send it out for public comment. And in terms of they didn't send our recommendations out for public comment after we voted on them.
Yeah, no, but they would need this because they need to solicit input from the GAC and the other supporting organizations. Remember, this is a consensus policy recommendation. They need to throw it out there for their advice and input.
Liz, could we impose on you to sit down with the calendar and figure out what the milestone dates have got to be?
No problem. Let's see.
I think sometime mid to late April is probably a wiser time frame to try to hit. But
I mean, there's no reason we couldn't call a special council meeting.
So you're right about the date. 17 April, 8th of May, 29th of May.
I mean, we moved to every 3 weeks because the view was that we didn't have as much to do, so we didn't need to have them every 2 weeks. I mean, I wouldn't let, I can't imagine any counselor refusing to have a special meeting to vote on this in order to get it to the board for Paris. I mean, maybe I'm foolish, but it just...
I can imagine one.
What?
I could imagine at least one. If it doesn't involve a working group.
Well, you know what I mean.
So Paris is the 22nd through the 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Our preceding meeting, to give order to...
I think we've agreed that the board has to have it by May 29.
Yeah.
In order to have their 30 days. It's everything before that.
Right.
That
right.
We're not real clear on.
All right, so why don't we just let Liz take that away and come back to us with a proposed
right.
calendar. And meanwhile...
I mean, the 8th is the preceding council meeting. So if the council voted on it by the 8th, the issue is just doing the board report in time to... and I guess there may need to be another public comment period. I'll check that while you all... Who's got the pen on writing the language at this point?
Well, I've got a... draft here. I think the only suggestion for language change that's been made is in that last sentence. Am I correct?
No. There's the issue of net adds.
Oh yeah,
right.
I do have that change as well. Net. I call it 10% of its net new registrations in that month.
Right. We need to define that somewhere.
Right.
And we need to define that as what exactly?
Total adds. Total new registrations minus
AGP deletes.
Right.
Less domains deleted during AGP.
And I think we wanted to incorporate the words from the funnel request on the...
on the second bullet.
Deemed speculation, or deemed extraordinary circumstances.
Right, I just sent that language around. You got that, Mike, right?
Sure, I thought it was pretty long, so...
And then there's general typos and stuff. Let's assume we can get, if Michael's taking the lead on writing, we get them to him within 12 hours or so.
All right, that'd be great.
And you took out the, you would need to take out the slash renewal.
Right.
Slash renewal, I already took that out, yeah.
Okay.
So this extraordinary circumstances language goes just basically cut and paste over the last sentence of the second bullet, right? Obviously change star.
No, it doesn't replace it. Well, okay.
It gets added in.
The sentence may include that already.
The emergency operator's determination of whether or not to grant an exemption shall be at its sole reasonable discretion, and then you put the second part of that,
yeah.
Provided that blah, blah.
However,
right.
Extraordinary circumstances which reoccur regularly will be deemed not the extraordinary. Got it. Got it. All right. Anything else?
So what are you going to do about the constituency statements and what you want to ask for?
You do need to ask for the impact.
So it's a different, obviously it's a different motion that we make for our next meeting, which is a timing motion and can include basically the notion that we want to ask for updated constituency impact statements and for public comment on this motion.
Yeah, essentially the council is considering passing this motion. We need comments on it.
Right. Anyone want to stab at that?
I will, but I can't get to it until after Thursday. Are we going to try and vote on this next Thursday?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Does that mean you could do it today? No, it's 5:30 back
then. No. I've got like 5 hours of license drafting.
I'll tell you what. I'll do it.
Excellent. I'll buy a drink in Paris.
All right. Make it two.
All right.
You got the expense account. All right. Anything else?
So, Mike, you're going to do the that language plus the dates. And so I owe you dates that...
Do me dates. Back.
I'm just looking at the bylaws, and I am pretty clear on the first part, but I'm not clear on the second part after the council.
All right. Well, you and I could talk and hash out any questions. Sure.
Because I can't talk to you whether another public comment period is required before the board acts. I can see clearly that we'll need the board.
I think there's a public comment with our final report to the board. Pretty sure there is a public comment.
Yeah.
21 days.
But I think it could depend on how the council acts.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Not sure.
The nature of the board report certainly varies if there's a supermajority vote versus...
We don't have a supermajority vote. We're doomed to begin with, I think.
Well, and
that has to be our target.
That this actually, when I'm looking at the information about submitting to the board, it actually specifically talks about the financial impact to each constituency. An analysis of how the issue would affect each constituency, including any financial impact. So I think, query whether you want to ask that question now.
Yeah, ask that question.
Yes.
So it needs to be in your language.
Can you cut and paste that language, please?
An analysis of how the issue would affect each constituency, including any financial impact on the constituency.
In your email with the date, just that text and all.
Is that wording from the bylaws?
From the bylaws related to the council report to the board, section 11 under the GNSO.
Run here in a couple of minutes. We, anything else in the text of the motion? I think I got it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't add any more whereas clauses or anything. I think that just raises fodder for objection.
I need to add anything more.
Well, weren't we going to add something that domain tasting is bad?
Well, no, that was because we decided to leave in the thing at the end.
Oh, okay, all right. All right. Am I correct in thinking that we have a pretty tight timetable on this?
Yeah.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is that, and I know that my constituency had an issue in terms of getting its IRT statement in, but do we want to say ahead of time what the plan is going to be for those constituencies that, cannot meet the deadline? I mean, I don't want to have a situation where the inability of one constituency or two, I guess, if you get to more than three, then you have a problem. But, the inability of a constituency to get its statement in on time could really just, stop the whole thing in its tracks. And I'd like to avoid that.
It has been a problem in the recent past.
Yep. I mean, that's obviously broader than just this issue, although we can...
We really have no control over it.
I don't know what we can do, in advance, other than tell people, we really, really mean it. It's going to be up to the council to decide to act with or without information.
No, but if we're going to have a motion, put it in the motion, that basically this is the date that your statements are due, and, that in short, that the report will continue through the process, even if his constituency has been unable to submit its report by that time.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
So you're trying to get this motion passed on for posting on the, say, 7th, right? For,
yeah.
For all posts. postings, all comments to be in by the 27th or 28th, and then summary to be prepared for by the 3rd, and then council action on the 17th of April. So final motions, changes to motions, and any other activity. The final action by the council, or targeted action by the council on the 17th of April.
Yep, that means this group needs to get the motion finalized, ideally by the 10th. Well, I think actually Avi said it was 5 days, not 7, with her preference. So at least Stealth will go ahead and get another meeting of this team, get it on our calendars for, you know, right there around April 4th or 5th, whatever works.
And then working back from Paris, I just need to figure out what the board's going to need. Assuming that the council acts by the 17th.
Okay, and we need to make sure we're on the agenda for the next council meeting.
I'll take care of that with the...
Okay.
Plus, Aubrey's on our list here, so where?
True.
All right.
Now, did we also capture in that Mike's notes about all the changes to the language, the annual review?
That I don't have. Did somebody send? Someone's going to send that around, right? Some.
You had a specific thought, Christina, didn't you?
I think my thought was just copy what's in the transfer.
Oh, that on the transfer policy.
Yeah, and I have no idea what that is, so I'll just go with it.
Hold on, I'm looking it up.
All right, I got to run here, folks. I think I've got my March papers, though. If someone sends me that language, and Liz will send me the dates and some other language, and I think I got it. All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
That's great. Being
bye, everyone.
Being a great meeting, we may actually pull this off.
Yep.
Woohoo!
All right, bye.
Bye.
Take care.